I'd like to start out with my bel gata, which is an acknowledgement that I make mentally, just about my intention when I approach about inviting the bell. Listen, listen, the sound of this bell runs through me clean and clear. I am a conduit, free of self. I invite you to awaken to your true nature, bringing light, joy, and wisdom deep in your heart. The part in there about a conduit free of self is free of my narrative. And that's something that I focus on so you can hear the bell in its true nature. And with practice, this opens up the space in me to hold the space in the room. And it lets me be attentive to needs individually and collectively to maintain the balance. This is my approach to mindful meditation. Settling the commentary I add to thoughts rising and passing. There's an inner raw honesty that transcends having to uphold external validity or authority. So you can observe it, or I can observe a deep honesty that looks at where my ego wants to weave the web in each moment. And so in contemplation, the credibility for anything that arises is how confident I am that my intent was not interfered out of the thought that selective listening yields selective truth. And so when I ask, am I sure? I also ask, why am I sure? Is this something that I've developed it from some point in time that I have clung on to some idea or perspective? And why do I have that perspective? Or is it some persuasion or both in how I clung on to what I heard was said or repelled? And so another thing I'll ask is, does my moral nature supersede accountability? And with that, I'll offer a story. I'm in a book club at the moment, and we're reading a book called World is Lover, World is Self. And it's by an author, Joanna Macy, who's kind of known in the Buddhist community. And she tells a personal story about being at a function and checking out of a hotel with a friend, and they're in the lobby as they're leaving. Their friend's suitcase popped open, and out came a bunch of hotel towels. And she was impressed on how the lady just methodically just picked up the towels, placed them on the counter, and nonchalantly just continued on with absolutely no sense of just some sort of entitlement. So as we use discretion on how we consume what we hear, observe how we are outwardly focused and how that influences the perspective of victim versus oppressor, and how a simple label can serve as either a validating excuse or invalidating assumption. And so with the hotel towel situation, the validating excuse is maybe it's I'm a mindful meditator, and therefore I'm exempt from any accountability of taking hotel towels, and you know, maybe an invalidating assumption is they have enough towels, missing a few won't hurt, and any of those things that somehow give privilege. So we want to hear what we want to hear, and either receptive without question or coiled to debate and devalue. No one is listening when both are speaking, and it becomes more of a parallel monologue. And the means of enforcing one's will can vary from the obvious violent threat to a calm, dismantling assessment. And one thing that really comes to mind these days is some press conferences that I've seen with, I don't know, one of our big figures, if you will, that if they don't want to answer a question, it's their method of shutting up the journalist. And it's pretty fierce. There's the method, there's constant interjection and circumventing and stifling the journalist, and a repeated berating where one could almost be provoked to shout back or just cower away from exhaustion and realizing that this is pointless, and this is a person just asking from the source what they should print. And right here at home, we had the person who's our governor. There's a few years ago, there was a press conference. A journalist asked a question, and all of a sudden, this man is off the stage attacking him. He didn't just shove him either. And the next day, this person's ratings went up. So if your neighbor was already voting for this person, now your other neighbor is. This is after this situation. And so you've got two different perspectives going on. And for me, it's hard to not be abhorred at this is how we shush people, and it's accepted. And the other side not only favors it, but they want a person in office, and that's the majority of this state, because that person is now our governor. So we don't like to be second-guessed. And the acceptable response has become more of an audacity to be questioned. My way or the highway, and silence the opposition. So just on those smoky days, when that smoke looks pretty dense, so there's just a silhouette of a mountain across the valley, that smoke is just as dense right here as you looked across the street. And so I ask myself how this shows up in the community. How do we treat each other? How does this trickle down as this becomes acceptable behavior from our authority figures? Misleading talk, selectively omitting details, demonizing to invalidating the opposition, escalating dialogue. Once you're going through this litany of things, you haven't even broached the topic at hand. It's more like circumventing and trying to win the conversation or win the point of view. And so communication begins beyond evaluating validity and discretion. Once you're past that, we're free of assigned labels. Equanimity is mutual accountability and reverence. Right sizing means your view is not more equal. The hat you think you wear does not make your viewpoint and the morality is not somebody else's morality. And so there's a shared solution, and the overall picture is bigger than the individual differences. So right now, I'd like to invite you to close your eyes for a short contemplation. Observe the concentric circles of unconditioned love, beginning with yourself. Breathe into that. Now extend that concentric circle of unconditioned love out to those closest to you. Your friends, your parents, siblings, or your partner. And consider the joys and concerns and the extent that you would go to for their safety and comfort. Now let that periphery of the unconditional love extend out to the community. Those you see once in a while, every other day. Feel your heart project further across the region, across the planet. Now hold that space for the planet and all the beings with a maternal, bittersweet compassion. Compassion, meaning being with the suffering. With bittersweet care. Our tradition, maybe known as Plum Village tradition, has a practice called beginning anew, where feelings are expressed by shining light on one another. Flower watering is the term for expressing favorable qualities. And it's really the true essence of namaste, where the flower in me adores the flower in you. And this also establishes reverence and respect. For instance, a flower watering of "my cat likes you" doesn't quite make it, misses the point. So you have the flower watering as expressing favorable qualities, and then there's the compost side. And that relates to areas of friction. And this is expressed with the intention of growth and no malice. A shared solution maintains harmony. It's very beautiful and gentle practice. Sometimes with an unbiased mediator is good too. But in order for this to work, there must be equanimity and right sizing. And a mutual respect and accountability is requisite. So I'd like to leave you with a quote by Shunryu Suzuki. In the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities, but in the expert's, there are few.